You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This is the time of year that publications all seem to be compiling predictions for the year ahead. The Economist has been doing it for 22 years now, and its executive editor, Daniel Franklin, who is also the editor of the annual series, has been visiting this show since 2005 to share his magazine's prognostications. He joins me again to reveal what The Economist has come up with for its The World in 2008 issue, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to the show. Hello.
Hello.
The cover of The World in 2008 features the seal of the American president. Is the presidential election going to be the most significant event of 2008?
Well, I think it's one of the perhaps two events that we know for sure are going to be happening that will resonate around the world and will be watched with extraordinary interest, not just in the United States, but everywhere, and of course has an influence everywhere. People are extraordinarily curious to see who will succeed George Bush in the White House.
Some years back, Louise Leakey of the famous Leakey family of Kenya said that everyone in the world should be allowed to vote in the American presidential race because of its global importance.
Well, that's right. I think people, of course, literally that can't happen, but everywhere around the world, I think it's recognized that this is a crucial decision, not just for the United States, but for the world as a whole. And that's why I think, particularly now that the race is getting going in earnest, there will be an enormous interest in following it quite closely.
You're not going out on a limb when you call it a $1 billion campaign.
No, I think it's going to be the most expensive campaign ever. That's pretty much a certainty. So money will play its part. But in the end, I think it is just a gripping drama that that will run throughout the year, obviously starting in a day's time and then through to the general election in November.
Was The Economist willing to make a prediction as to who will win the White House?
Yes, we stuck our necks out and said that Hillary Clinton would emerge the winner for a number of reasons. I think it is the Democrats are in the strongest position to win, and she, perhaps I would still argue, is in the strongest position to win the nomination. But of course, it's tightening, it's plenty of time for surprises, and both the nominations look very, very close at the moment.
Well, before the 2004 election, if the Economist had published around this time, it would have said Howard Dean was likely to be the Democratic nominee.
Maybe, but in fact, we got that right around this time. We did predict George Bush would win again. I don't know that we'll get it right again this time, but it's certainly going to be, I think, one of the most interesting campaigns ever.
Well, how often do you get it right? Get most of your predictions right, or at least as many wrong as you got right?
We try to. Every year I take a hard look at what we predicted the year before and give a bit of a reckoning. And I think our record isn't bad. We get quite a bit right, but we do, of course, get some things wrong. And the things that we perhaps get most wrong are the things that we miss out altogether, not elections, for example, that we call the wrong way, but events that we just don't see coming because, of course, the world is an unpredictable place. So I think readers understand that this is a best informed guess of what is likely to happen seen from the end of the previous year. And if we had perfect ability to predict what was happening, the world would be perhaps a little less interesting.
And you're using different tools than an astrologer might?
Yes, although sometimes perhaps an astrologer might do just as well. We're really just calling on people who follow their particular part of the world or their particular topic very, very closely and ask them to go a little bit further than they normally do in the course of reporting on events to say, stick their neck out and say, what do they actually think will be happening in the next year to 18 months?
Well, I don't want to embarrass you, but I remember that in 2005, you predicted that the world would be a safer place in the coming year.
Yes, well, and in some ways, I think that perhaps, although, you know, it may not feel that way, it was probably not actually wrong. That if you look at the numbers of deaths around the world through conflict, over time those have gone steadily down if you take a long-term horizon. So sometimes those sorts of counterintuitive predictions, which you may think are not right because it seems like we still live in a very dangerous world, actually are true.
You said that the American election is one of the two most significant events. What's the other?
I think the other one, the event that we actually know is going to happen, is the Beijing Olympics in the summer. And it's not just that the Olympics themselves will be a big event watched by vast quantities of people around the world. It's that this is a catalyst for China's arrival on the world stage in a major way. It's become a bit of a cliche to call it China's coming out party. So the world's eyes will be on China because of the games and because China's importance to the world is growing in so many ways, economically, politically, in terms of its impact on the environment, for example. In all these ways, China is becoming, next to the United States, one of the great influences in the way world events unfold.
So the Olympics are kind of a symbol of this coming out. China will become the world's third largest economy next year. As you say, the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, the world's biggest exporter.
Yes, it's overtaking Germany in the next 12 months or so as the world's biggest exporter. It's also overtaking Germany, as you say, to become the world's third largest economy behind only America and Japan. But it's not all good news. Yes, the world's biggest polluter, the world's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, probably the world's leading athletic nation. It'll probably win the most gold medals with its home territory advantage, although the Chinese themselves are trying to downplay that because it puts a lot of pressure on their competitors.
Now, Time magazine chose Russian President Vladimir Putin as its person of the year. Is he as big a story as Time magazine would have suggested?
Well, they're, of course, referring to the past year, and I think he is a big story. He's certainly, not necessarily for the right reasons, as one would see it from outside Russia, but he's certainly reestablished Russia as a force to be reckoned with in the world. Next year is going to be a bit of a tricky year for Russia because, as I'm sure you know, he is limited to two terms. So there has to be a new president in Russia in 2008. And he is managing to remain in power, it seems, by appointing a friendly face as the man who will no doubt win the presidency and having himself installed as prime minister. But that makes for a very uncertain transition. So I think there's going to be a lot of concern about how that power arrangement is going to work in Moscow.
And you predict that nationalism will become a major issue in Russian politics this year.
Well, it already is to some extent, and I think that's only going to grow. And that's partly a reflex of the perhaps the insecurity of the elite surrounding Putin, that they tend to use nationalism as a way to shore themselves up and to look at what they see about the hostile world around them. And when they are insecure, then, of course, it helps them to play the nationalist card.
Well, it's been said that the culture wars have become a major factor in American politics. I don't know how important they'll be in the upcoming election. But you predict that culture wars have gone global, or going global.
Increasingly going global because of the rise of religion in many parts of the world. Perhaps Europe is the big exception there, where religion has been in a sort of long-term decline in much of the continent. But elsewhere, religion is growing very strongly, even in country like China, which has tried to actually downplay religion officially. And I think as that spreads and as the competition for religion for adherence between the great religions grows, then we'll see some interesting arguments, one hopes, not violent ones, between different religions and between church and state.
My guest is Daniel Franklin, executive editor of The Economist and also the editor of the annual The World to Come series that The Economist has been running for the past 22 years. The World in 2008 is just out. And we're talking about some of the predictions included. Is it a safe bet to predict that Robert Mugabe will be reelected as president of Zimbabwe in March?
Yes, I think it's a safe bet that you know, he'll be there perhaps as long as his health allows him to be there. It's unfortunate that there seems to be very little inclination among political leaders in the region to put pressure on him to mend his ways. But I think he's nothing if not a great survivor.
Have you made any predictions about whether Pervez Musharraf will remain in power in Pakistan?
Well, Pakistan is very much a moving story as we speak. I think that's perhaps the hardest to call. And as we went to press on this, the story was changing more or less by the day. So we haven't predicted that he will actually stay in power. We've certainly predicted that his position will be extremely shaky, and indeed the situation in the country will be very unsettled probably throughout the year.
Will Gordon Brown remain in power in Britain?
Yes, I think he will. We had a great drama in Britain when he toyed with the idea of calling a general election in the autumn and then shied away from it. And ever since, his premiership has been in trouble. But he doesn't actually have to have an election for another couple of years. And he has a very strong majority in the House of Commons. So unless things go really disastrously wrong for him, I think he's safe for the coming year. But it won't be an easy year for him because his political fortunes have not been very good, and the economy in Britain is not looking very good at the moment.
And is that because of problems unique to the UK, like Northern Rock, or because the global economy is so linked these days that America's economic problems become the problems of our allies?
Yes, I think it's both of those things. Certainly we've suffered from some of the overflow from the subprime troubles in the United States. Britain's economy is also, like America's, has been very, very driven by the property market in recent years and the extraordinary rise in property values, even greater than in America, actually. Over the past 10 years, house prices in Britain have gone up by over 200%. So that's now in trouble there as it is in America, and that's causing troubles. Also, the financial services industry itself is very important. The City of London, very big influence on the British economy as a whole. And so the problems of the banking sector spell difficulties for the economy as a whole. Gordon Brown's difficulties generally, though, not just the economy, but just the fact that his party's been in power for so long now, there is almost inevitably a fatigue sets in after over a decade of the same party being in power.
And he's not exactly the most charismatic of politicians.
Well, you know, at first that was a bit of an advantage for him because voters were slightly tired of the charisma of Tony Blair. So when he first took over, there was a collective sigh of relief, I think, that there was an anti-charisma prime minister. But I think that's now worn off, and perhaps a little bit of nostalgia, a little bit of charisma might be welcome again.
You predict that the American economy will narrowly avoid a recession.
Just about, although it's touch and go. I think the chances of a recession in America are uncomfortably high, although we call it the other way, that it'll just avoid it thanks to actions by the Fed. And also the other bright news is the demand that comes from overseas. The dollar has a very low value at the moment, so American goods are very competitive, and demand in places like China and other big emerging markets is very strong.
But American manufacturing has been pretty much on the decrease over the past few years. Do we have much to sell the rest of the world?
Well, there's still quite a lot of it left. Although it has been on the decrease, you're right. It's still America is still a huge manufacturer. Not always, again, the sort of popular perception, but it is, that's the case. And so there is a lot to sell, and also services become cheaper, tourism becomes attractive, all sorts of things that start to pick up when the dollar is low compared to, say, the euro.
Will some countries benefit from our downturn, China, for example?
Actually, everybody, I think, suffers economically when America suffers. One of the great debates that I think we'll perhaps see some answers to over the coming year is to what extent the world economy has become a little bit separated from its dependence on America. So if America does sneeze badly, how bad is the cold that everybody else catches? But essentially, even countries like China aren't happy when America starts to have problems economically because, of course, China is selling a lot of its products to the United States.
In March, we'll mark the fifth anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. What are your predictions for the coming year? You're assuming that Hillary Clinton will win the presidential election, although she would not assume office until 2009, and she, of all the Democrats, is probably committed to troops remaining there longest. So do you see this as a really long-term stay in Iraq?
Well, for 2008, of course, as you say, the person still in the White House will be George Bush, and there will be some reduction in troop numbers as the surge winds down somewhat, but certainly it's going to be a problem that he will bequeath to his successor. And I think whoever that successor is, whether it's Hillary Clinton or somebody else, it will be hard to exit very quickly because the situation on the ground will be such that a precipitous exit would be extremely destabilizing. So certainly a new president can try to steer a new direction, but I wouldn't expect huge changes overnight from the beginning of 2009.
Well, last year, The Economist predicted that President Bush would be able to get more things done in 2007.
One of the things we got wrong, I'm afraid. we thought that there was a chance, despite the new division between a Democratic Congress and the White House, that there might be a chance of getting at least immigration reform through, and of course that didn't happen.
But his own party turned on him
in
that case.
That's right, and I think the chances, you would have to say, of any serious legislative progress in 2008 are even slimmer.
Will President Bush focus more on foreign policy, as many lame duck presidents have in the past, when they start thinking about legacy?
Yes, I think that's highly likely. Typically, in their last year, presidents travel rather a lot. I would expect President Bush to do the same. And, you know, in foreign policy, he still has considerable powers, and perhaps there are one or two things that might, perhaps underneath the radar screen, turn out better than expected. North Korea is perhaps a quiet success for this administration. There's even a possibility, although I think it's a small one, that there might be some sort of grand bargain with Iran in the coming year.
But right now it's the only remaining member of the Axis of Evil.
That's right. So if there could be a deal of some sort with Iran, then that would be quite a legacy for President Bush.
Although, to some degree, that would be forced upon the Bush administration because it was recently revealed that Iran had ceased its nuclear weapons program in 2003, despite the fact that the Bush administration had been saying otherwise until very recently.
Yes, although that revelation or that assessment might actually be helpful. It might make it easier for the administration to talk with Iran. It gets them more space, if you like, for negotiations.
Do you expect that Republicans running for re-election in Congress will try to distance themselves from the president?
I would think so. I think he's not going to be a great vote winner for any Republican candidate in the coming year. So I would expect that will happen, and that's probably something that would be widely expected by the country as a whole.
Now, this year will also mark the 60th anniversary of the creation of the State of Israel. just as another round of Middle East peace negotiations start. Are you any more hopeful about this round than previous rounds?
Well, it's always dangerous to be too hopeful about rounds of peace in the Middle East. In fact, they can be particularly dangerous moments, because as soon as peace talks become serious, then the parties that would like to not see them succeed get very busy and have every interest in sabotaging them, increasing the violence. So as we've seen before, when President Clinton, in his final year in office, in his last months, in fact, tried it very intensively to produce a settlement, the whole thing ended in a great deal of violence, not through want of trying from the Clinton administration, but it is a very, very difficult and dangerous thing to try to pull off.
Now, the people who write the articles in these issues are writers for The Economist, but also you've invited guest writers, Nicolas Sarkozy, for example, Nancy Pelosi, Mayor Bloomberg here in New York, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi put special emphasis on reducing greenhouse gas emissions in her thing. Do you think that we'll see a bill passed to do that? Will the president be any more willing to negotiate with Congress this year?
I think it's quite possible that this will be a year of frustration for environmental global warming activists, if you like, because the politicians have talked it up so much, and it's not just Nancy Pelosi. Every single major politician who contributes to this edition of the World in 2008, as you say, Mayor Bloomberg, Sarkozy himself, we have also the Secretary General of the United Nations. They all put this right at the top of their agenda, and yet the pressure is, I believe, not going to be quite there to make a real breakthrough in 2008. The deadline for that set in Bali is 2009. So while there may be some minor legislation in Washington, I don't think it'll be breakthrough legislation. I think the real activity on climate change will be at a different level, at the level of investment in new technologies. There's a lot of money chasing alternative energy sources and so on, and ingenuity of firms seeking market opportunities in technologies that can help alleviate the problem.
This year, the European Union is expected to ratify a new treaty that will add an EU president and strengthen foreign policy representative. Is this a sign that the EU is getting back on track after the failure of the European Constitution in 2005?
Yes, a little bit. And I'm, you know, this was one of the things that I think we got right last year round, that this constitution was killed in referendums in France and the Netherlands, but it has resurfaced in a somewhat milder form, although all the essence of it is still there, just really the name and a few trimmings have changed. It's not a dramatic reform, but actually getting it signed, ratified, and behind the European Union will allow this club to function a little bit more smoothly, with now 27 members, and will avoid the paralysis that set in after the rejection in those referendums.
And France is taking over the rotating presidency of the EU for the second half of 2008. Nicolas Sarkozy has been seen as more admiring of the United States than most of his predecessors. But I wonder what he thinks about something else you predict here, that the United States will overtake France as the world's leading wine consumer.
Yes, that's a little bit of a shock to the system in France. I think Mr. Sarkozy is a hyperactive president. He's certainly changed the image of France very rapidly. Its foreign policy is extremely active. He outlines initiatives in just about every part of the world. But funnily enough, his real challenge is going to come at home. It's also the anniversary of the so-called events of 1968, violence in the streets of Paris. And his domestic reforms are going to be very controversial, trying to tackle the very rigid labor laws, for example, in France, the 35-hour week that was introduced by a previous socialist government. And it's very likely that there will be some street demonstrations to try to challenge that. So it's a bit of a make-or-break year for Sarkozy at home to see whether he can really be a reforming president.
Just one more thing. 2008 is also the International Year of the Potato, according to the UN. And I wondered if you have any ideas of why Belarus leads the world in potato consumption.
Well, I'm glad you reminded us of the most important thing in the year ahead, which is the International Year of the Potato. Not a clue about Belarus. It leads, not just leads, it's way ahead of everybody else.
Eastern Europe in general consumes a lot of potatoes, considering the fact that there were no potatoes in the old world until after Spain went into South America. This is kind of stunning. They eat a lot more potatoes than anybody in the Andes,
yes,
does.
It was actually the Peruvians who were particularly keen on having an International Year of the Potato. But the potato, it has become a vital part of the diet in Eastern Europe and in Russia. But Belarus is, as you say, is off the charts. Off the bud charts, we would say in London.
My great thanks to Daniel Franklin for visiting with us once again. He is the executive editor of The Economist and the editor of The World in 2008, which not only features articles by journalists from The Economist, but also from Nicolas Sarkozy, the Dalai Lama, Nancy Pelosi, Michael Bloomberg, Angelina Jolie, Felipe Calderon, Ban Ki-moon. The only one who's missing, I think, is Bono. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. My pleasure.